Today is July 26, 2023, and this is the morning session of Portland City Council meeting. Keelan, will you please call the roll?
Good morning. Gonzalez.
Here.
Maps.
Here.
Rubio.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Wheeler.
Great. Now we'll hear from the city attorney.
Welcome to the Portland City Council. To testify before council in person or virtually, you must sign up in advance on the council agenda at portland.gov/council/agenda. Information on engaging with city council can be found on the council clerk's webpage. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during city council meetings. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify, unless otherwise stated. A timer will indicate when your time is done. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If you cause a disruption, a warning will be given. Further disruption will result in ejection from the meeting. Anyone who fails to leave once ejected is subject to arrest for trespass. Additionally, council may take a short recess and reconvene virtually. Your testimony today should address the matter being considered. When testifying, state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. For testifiers joining virtually, please unmute yourself once the council clerk calls your name. Thank you.
Thank you for that. First up is communications. Keelan, can you please call item number 616 and the first individual?
We've had a request that the communications come and read together. Is that okay if they all come up?
Sure.
Okay, I'll read all of them. Item 616, request of Edith Gillis to address council regarding Portland Gray Panthers. Item 617, request of Rose Kunau to address council regarding Portland Gray Panthers. Item 618, request of Saskia Hostetler-Lippe to address council regarding Portland Gray Panthers. Item 619, request of Cheryl Lewis to address council regarding Portland Gray Panthers. Item 620, request of Lou Church to address council regarding Portland Gray Panthers.
So do you have Edie first?
Edith?
Hello, I'm Edith Gillis. As long as this council violates the will of voters and wastes so much of our hard-earned money on police and protecting their crimes, the city won't have the money, staff, programs, public trust and cooperation, votes, investments, and volunteerism to make Portland livable and resilient, providing the services that Portland Gray Panthers advocate. Choose to act from healing truth, principle, and love, not from the cancer of lies, injustice, and fear that policing spreads. Expand, fully fund, and support Portland Street Response 24/7 in all neighborhoods. I'm also a member of the Pacific Northwest Family Circle, where survivors of police killing our innocent, nonviolent, non-threatening, law-abiding loved ones, then cops assassinating the character of the killed and surviving, destroying or withholding evidence, denying us facts, justice, and crime victim services, often robbing, impoverishing us, and threatening our housing and employment through cops, vandalism, and ongoing harassment and refusal to do their job. For 153 years, the Portland police have not provided public safety, have not protected Portlanders from racial violence, gender violence, domestic violence, employer violence, disabling or fatal corporate practices, police violence or other gang violence, landlord and banker violence causing houselessness, vehicular violence, corruption, theft, vandalism, or guaranteed disasters worsened by public policy, like the burning of homes and farms of Indigenous, Chinese Americans, and African Americans, the Vanport flood, the toxic explosion tank farms more destructive than the Hiroshima bomb. From their own self-reporting, Portland cops, like those nationwide, commit those very crimes they're paid to prevent, investigate, and document for proper solutions. Solutions like the PSR. Cops don't protect our worker rights, civil and human rights, but violate them. They do not strengthen our economy, democracy, and communities for disaster resilience, but weaken and poison them. They waste resources and lives. However, the Portland Street Response does none of that harm and does good the Portland Police Bureau, its association, and police elsewhere have never done. Police rely on distrust, fear, pain, harm, spreading violence. Portland Street Response is motivated by and spreads trustworthy, caring, practical solutions, mutual respect, hope, and healing, and reduces homelessness. PSR, housing, and parks cost less than cops and do more good. I want council members to follow and the public to sign the online petition, Friends of PSR. The purpose of police was to capture, terrorize, and brutalize or murder escaped and slain people and other workers, and to still keep most people poor and powerless. It depends on using fear and pain harm to control people. That never works to create the world we want and need, especially when we all pull together now to counter climate disasters, economic failure, pandemics, growing fascism in and out of policing, and water food shortages and brutal polices. Fully fund and support Portland Street Response 24/7 in all neighborhoods.
All right, whoever is next, please introduce yourself.
So should Rose go ahead? Mm-hmm. Okay, your turn.
My name is Rose Kunal. I am vice chair of the Oregon Consumer Advisory Council with the OHA. I am also here as part of Gray Panthers. You know, I was going to talk on one thing, but I had a little incident out front. I'm not sure what the council knows about gambling addiction. We spend an awful lot of time, energy, money, focus within the state off the back of addicts. We have taxes on alcohol, cigarettes, whatever, and we have a lottery commission. I am a compulsive gambler in long-term recovery. I'm also a gambling addiction counselor. I know about being there. I want the council to take into consideration when you're thinking about homelessness, poverty, people that are in crisis. I want organizations to stop talking about SUDs, substance use disorder. There's a whole world of us that might be drunks out here in the universe, but we haven't been diagnosed with a disorder. So that's nonsense, that's silliness. That is a clinical medical model. But those of us that are addicts, what you need to know is we are expanding. How many of us say to our children, our grandchildren, take this phone. Now go sit down and play a little game. Play your little game and be quiet. Be quiet. That little game that we can play now on our phone, I can lay up in my bed and lose the rent money, the electricity money, my car. I can lose everything just laying up in my bed because I've got all this stuff on my phone. Gamblers are the number one reasoning or folks that have for suicide. If you take a look at the medical models, it will tell you. We need to incorporate other addictions. It's not just about SUDs. Gambling addiction, I would like to participate. I would like to be invited. I would like to talk more about it. Today, I'm the newbie here. I'm a little yada, 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 a little nervous, a little whatever. But there's some really important issues that can help problem solve. And that's what we're going to, that's what we should be doing is problem solving.
Thank you.
So go ahead and start.
I want to thank Rose and Edie for checking in with Panthers today and talking. We had a couple other people that weren't able to make it, but liberty and union, now and forever, one and inseparable. I'm Lou, L-E-W, with Portland Gray Panthers. First, I want to say, in terms of what Edie talked about, it's vitally important to preserve, protect, and promote Portland Street Response. We don't need to have TJ Mayhew or Shaw, Renee or Dan Ryan try a submarine maneuver like they apparently did recently against charter reform. Charter reform, like Portland Street Response, is here. These programs represent change, progress, diversity, democracy. Some Portland State activists have reminded Panthers that both Dan Ryan and Renee Gonzalez defeated two black women to secure their seats, the incumbent Joanne Hardesty and the candidate Loretta Smith. We do, however, appreciate that Dan, Renee twice, Joanne, and Loretta all talked at candidate forums with Panthers of Portland State. It's good to briefly talk with Mingus at the Saturday Block Party. Well, Carmen and Ted, as mayor, have also talked at Portland Panther Forums. Mingus has talked with us three times so far. Portland State activists also tell us that they consider Carmen Rubio to be the hope of the Portland's future and urge Carmen to join the mayor's race for 2024, along with Mingus. With our three-minute time limit, given council packets on housing, Panthers generally, and gun reform, from Measure 114 to more activist projects to end gun violence here in Oregon and all 50 states. In the packet, there are endorsement forms for the Walmart boycott, both for individual council members and the council as a whole. Please endorse the boycott and return the attached envelope. I have a meeting coming up, as mentioned to Rose, Wednesday, August 9th in Las Vegas with Tennille Perona, the executive director of 58 Strong, the nonprofit formed in Nevada after a mass shooter killed 58 people, wounded 600 people, had 20 AR-15s and 1,000 bullets. The largest mass shooting in the history of Estados Unidos. Enough. On YouTube, the PSA is Walmart Boycott - Portland Gray Panthers. Watching the clock, here are some endorsers of the Walmart boycott. Ceasefire Oregon, Wyeast Unitarians, Pastor Mark Knudsen with LEVO, Sharon Gary Smith with NAACP, Jamal Dar with ICO, Ashton Simpson and Duncan Huang from Metro, County Commissioner Dr. Sharon Myron, Sandy Chung, Oregon ACLU, Molly Hogan with Welcome Home Coalition, Dr. Saskia Hostetter-Lippe, Dr. Lisa Reynolds, and many others have endorsed the Walmart boycott. Walmart left Portland due to low sales volume, and the boycott had hand in that. We invite especially Carmen Rubio, but also Mingus and Ted Wheeler to endorse the Walmart boycott. Gun violence affects BIPOC communities disproportionately. As anti-racist activists, we know that Shaw and TJ McHugh will urge both Dan Ryan and Renee Gonzalez to also endorse the Walmart boycott. Liberty and union, now and forever, one and inseparable. That's all.
Thank you, Lou. Yeah. Thanks so much for being here.
I just wanted to thank you, Rose, for your courage. I'm well aware that there's 12 steps when people enter into at least the 12-step program for addictions, and only the first step is different. The 11, the other steps are the same. So thank you for lifting that up. Appreciate
thank
it.
You. If I were to add anything, I'd like to say that what Lou was talking about, that incident in Las Vegas, the biggest mass shooting, was performed by who? The compulsive gambler. We're out here. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, so next, do we move on to consent?
Consent.
Okay.
No
items have been pulled. Okay, would you please call the roll?
Gonzalez.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye. Okay, consent passes. So let's move on to our first item. We do have a time certain. Mm-hmm.
Item 621, proclaim July 2023 to be Minority Mental Health Awareness Month.
Colleagues, our first time certain item of the day is a proclamation recognizing July 2023 as Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. I'd like to introduce and hand it over to our presenters today, Taisha McCool-Riley from Civic Life, Marvin Dean, Housing Bureau, and Courtney Gilmore from Bureau of Human Resources. Welcome.
Thank you for having us. Good morning. Good morning. I am Taisha McCool-Riley, Mental Health Program Specialist housed in the Office of Community and Civic Life. Our colleague Marvin Dean is not feeling well this morning, so he was not able to join us. And then I will allow Courtney to introduce herself.
Good morning. I am Courtney Gilmore, and I am the Health and Well-Being Program Manager for the City Strong Internal Wellness Program.
I'll start off with sharing some words. The theme of Minority Mental Health Awareness Month 2023 is culture, community, and connection. Community is what brings people together to advocate and support each other in the fight to overcome proposed threats. As human beings, we need a sense of belonging, and that sense of belonging is what connects us to the many relationships we develop. Participating in community bonds us by attitudes, values, and goals, and is essential and an essential ingredient to enjoying a fulfilling life. Culture, it creates a sense of security and safety for individuals as it gives them a united and unified sense of belonging. Culture provides discipline, knowledge, morals, self-realization, meaning of life, and safeguards future generations. And then there's connection. Social connection can lower anxiety and depression, help us regulate our emotions, and lead to higher self-esteem and empathy, and actually improve our immune systems. By neglecting our need to connect, we put our health at risk. When people are socially connected and have stable and supportive relationships, they are more likely to make healthy choices and to have better mental and physical health outcomes. As human beings, our lives are deeply intertwined with our environments, and these surroundings impact our mental health and overall well-being. Minority populations are faced with disproportionate amounts of historical trauma, systemic racism, and displacement that challenges their ability to heal and thrive in our environments. Nevertheless, culture, community, and connection are pillars that support, uplift, and empower individuals in the face of oppression, systemic racism, and mental bondage. It is of great importance that we gather today in solidarity to bring awareness to the unique struggles that underrepresented communities face regarding mental health disabilities in the United States. We cannot travel the journey to healing without acknowledging and holding space for the events and experiences that caused hurt, harm, or danger. Nor can we ignore a system that was founded upon superiority, control, and power. If we are to seek to find true solutions, we must acknowledge our history and its impacts on our present-day reality. From enslavement to concentration camps, to human trafficking, to modern-day slavery, to racism, to discrimination, to suppression, to oppression, to stigma, to inequity, to exclusion, and to assimilation. Minority communities for far too long have been neglected and silenced, treated as sloppy seconds who aren't deserving of respect and dignity. Today we declare that we are important, valuable, worthy, and deserving to be seen, heard, validated, and empowered to center our well-being. Mental health issues are treatable and often preventable, but not everyone has the access to resources they need. People in some racial and ethnic minority groups face more challenges than others getting mental health care. Everyone benefits when people from racial and ethnic minority groups can thrive. We all have a role to play in promoting health equity. So for us that are here at the city and we're often looking around and examining our current surroundings and our policies, our practices, and our procedures, there's some things that we can do to make sure that we are centering the health and well-being of all employees, but it also does include an inclusion lens that really focuses on how do we also make sure that we are tending to the wellness of our minority staff. And that goes by ensuring that people's preferences, needs, and values guide decisions to provide a personalized and empowering environment at work. Supporting the person at the center of the workforce to be involved in making decisions about their employee experience. Acknowledging each person's life experience, age, gender, culture, beliefs, and identities. Applying flexible approaches, initiatives, and policies to support employees and prioritize their needs. Also by promoting a strengths-based approach to acknowledge people as experts in their role, as well as responding to the needs of the workforce and building a support network to provide tools, resources, and information to support employees in centering their well-being. As I close, I want us to reflect on our past, evaluate our present, and intentionally, compassionately, and strategically
plan for an equitable, inclusive, and supportive future grounded in culture, community, and connection. And I'll close with a poem, and it's called In Community. In community lies strength of numbers to support the sick and the weak. In community, somebody hears me with louder voices to speak. In community lies public purpose to shield from the harshness of life, to offer and receive common friendship, to protect from the gun and the knife. In community, we teach each other about science and art and sport. From the we gain our validity, and through this our sickness is fought. In community, others surround us, their dreams, their love, excuse me, and their faces encourage our hearts to prosper, our minds to accept other places. In community, disaster may come, but grief shared and faith in our all makes death pall linger less strongly. Our tears with others can fall. In community lies man's ambition without making larger of our fears. Today we make sense of being and bring joy and length to our years. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So I am going to start off with some facts that we all should know when it comes to Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. So Black and African Americans are 20% more likely to experience a mental health issue. Only 2.3% of Black or Hispanic young people see someone for mental health issues for every year. Native Americans between the ages of 18 and 24 have the highest suicide rates of any group, any ethnic group. And 40% of Native Americans who die by suicide are between the ages of 15 and 24. 40% of white American adults seek treatment regularly for their mental health, but only 25% of African American and Black adults do the same. So as we recognize July as the National Minority Mental Health Month, regardless of age, race, or social economic status, or whoever you are, anyone can experience a mental health issue or concern or some type of distress. According to the National Alliance on Mental Health Illness, every year, 1 in 5 adults will experience a mental illness, and that's about 20% of our population in the United States. Even though everyone can experience a mental illness, not everyone from every background is going to have the same access to psychological treatment and care they will need to properly deal with their mental health concerns. And so in recognition of Minority Mental Health Awareness Month, in 2008, the U.S. House of Representatives established the month of July as B.B. Moore Campbell National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. And B.B. Moore Campbell was the co-founder of NAMI, and she worked tirelessly to advocate for individuals and minority groups to receive the proper education and treatment for their mental health. Thank you.
Thank you. Does this conclude your presentation?
Yes, it is.
Thank you so much. So I'll turn it over to my council colleagues for comment. Commissioner Mounts?
Thank you, Madam President. Colleagues, I'd like to start off by thanking the mayor for bringing this item forward, and I would also like to thank our guests for today's presentation. I also want to say this. I am delighted to join this council in proclaiming July 2023 to be National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month is observed each July. The purpose of this month is in part
to bring awareness to the unique challenges racial and ethnic minority communities face when they try to access mental health care. This month is important because in these United States, racial and ethnic minorities suffer from mental illness at rates far higher than their white counterparts. In addition, racial and ethnic minorities are much less likely to receive mental health care than their white counterparts, which is why this National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month, this council, our partners at Multnomah County, the state of Oregon, and the federal government must come together to ensure that every Oregonian has access to affordable, high quality, evidence-based mental health care, regardless of the color of their skin. Colleagues, for these reasons and more, I am proud to join you in proclaiming July 2023 to be National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you. Commissioner Ryan.
Yes, thank you, President Rubio. Thank you, Aisha, and thank you, Courtney, for that presentation. It was really well done. And your crisp words of culture, community, and connection will resonate with me all day. I know as a member of the Trillium Family Services Board, this topic has come up a lot. And the good news is that there was recruitment of people who are African-American on the board, which has really helped this conversation. I've been trying to fight the stigma and shame that mental health has on our society in general. And I think until we continue to out that and debunk that, it'll always be bad. And of course, disparities always hit African-American community. I appreciate the information, the data that you provided, the grim data about Native American community. Thank you for lifting that. And so here's to lifting the stigma and for everyone being more courageous in telling the truth. I wholeheartedly support and proclaim Minority Mental Health Awareness Month, and I really appreciate the courage of our city employees to lead the effort. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan. Commissioner Gonzalez, would you like to say anything? Good. All right. Thank you, Taisha and Courtney, for this informative and urgent proclamation for Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. At a time when there's so much stigma around mental health care and when there are so many disparities around all forms of health care, it's really heartening to see the city and you two in particular take this leadership role on behalf of the city. So we're very appreciative and proud of your work there. There are so many challenges faced by Black and Brown communities when it comes to taking care of ourselves and our well-being. And it's important to raise awareness to these two, as you mentioned, Taisha, their unique struggles. They're uniquely, they're unique to the community in particular. Yes. And the injustice that these communities experienced throughout their lifetimes, but also unique in the powerful role of community in this healing as well. So we can and we should always do more to expand access and work to combat these injustices every day and continue to do that every day faced by our Black and Brown communities. Mental health care is health care. And I'm happy to join you in encouraging everyone to educate themselves about this every day of the year. So thank you so much for your work here. So now we'll continue to the proclamation reading. Whereas the City of Portland takes pride in joining Americans throughout the country in recognizing July 2023 as National Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. And whereas Minority Mental Health Awareness Month recognizes and pays tribute to the contributions that minorities have made to American history in their struggles for liberation, inclusion, and equality, and deepens our understanding of our shared history. Whereas the reality of acknowledging and the health and wellness of Black and Brown communities concedes to the historical and modern day challenges of people of color's limited subpar access to adequate health care and resources that promote holistic wellness with an emphasis on mental health. Acknowledging systems that have created and perpetuated anti-Black and Brown generational oppressive practices within the healthcare industry, promoting the experience of trauma, division, disease, illness, crisis, and ultimately death. And whereas, according to the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, over 70% of Black African American adolescents with a major depressive episode did not receive treatment for their condition. Almost 25% of adolescents with a major depressive episode in the last year were Hispanic, Latino, Asian American adults were less likely to use mental health services than any other racial ethnic group. In the past year, nearly 1 in 10 American Indian or Alaska Native young adults had serious thoughts of suicide. And in the past year, 1 in 7 Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander adults had a diagnosable mental illness. And whereas, as genuine and complete descriptions of health needs to include all aspects of a person, including physical, mental, emotional, financial, relational, and spiritual health, and any genuine and complete measure of wellness needs to reflect the level of these areas to the extent that individuals can successfully fulfill the innate essence of existence, which leads to self-love, good health, connection, empowerment, new life, and heritage. And whereas laws and business practices were established to marginalize minority families and ensure their representations were limited to certain areas and restricted from being represented in others. And whereas the attacks on minority communities have been intended to cause harm and hinder the creation of generational health and wealth, but in many instances it created deeper and more determined roots from which a foundation of incredible strength, resilience, perseverance, grace, and unity have been built. And whereas generations of minority individuals, families, and communities played a significant role in protesting the necessity for Black and Brown individuals and families to be viewed and valued as human beings, respected, dignified, and worthy of receiving tools, services, and resources centering their wellness. And whereas transformative action and change is imperative for survival, where this country addresses and finally removes the roots of indirect and unconscious harm that have been done and continue to be perpetuated by mixed messages of our current personal and community's condition, by pursuing a holistic approach to health and wellness that embodies cultural competence, increased access, decreased barriers to receive care, trauma-informed practices, and compassionate care. And whereas we at the City of Portland embrace an environment that focuses on centering, supporting, and engaging employees' well-being, providing employees with a voice to identify their needs and how they would like to be supported, providing employees with access to learning and development opportunities focused on collective healing and holistic well-being from varying perspectives, and fostering an environment that promotes a sense of well-being in employees by acknowledging and valuing them. And whereas we call all to action to use your voice to become an advocate, to speak out on behalf of mental health for underrepresented groups and communities when an opportunity arises, show compassion and seek to understand the experience of individuals with identities different from your own, and share information on quality of care and from a cultural and equity lens. And whereas to this day, millions of Americans across the country are experiencing representations of themselves woven throughout government, politics, entertainment, spiritual sectors, medical and wellness industry, business and media that inspires, motivates, and models attainable possibilities. And whereas once minority communities can start to focus on our health and wellness individually as well as corporately, we will see greater pride within ourselves, stronger connections in our families, healing in our communities, elevation of our values, and deeper and healthier roots of culture and heritage from which a future of love, honor, and respect, appreciation, achievement, and celebration will unarguably be the fruit. And whereas inequality and injustice continue to plague our systems, cities, states, and country, and it is the responsibility of citizens to advance the American notion of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for all. Now, therefore, the City of Portland, City Council of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim July 2023 to be Minority Mental Health Awareness Month in Portland and encourage all residents to observe this month. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, colleagues, Commissioner Ryan will need to leave at 11 a.m. So I would like to move items 629, 631, and 634 to the top of the regular agenda. Keelan, would you please read item 629?
Pay settlement of Logan Colwell bodily injury lawsuit for $95,000 involving the Portland Police Bureau.
So this ordinance resolves a suit brought against the city in August of 2022, and Deputy City Attorney Beth Woodard and Senior Claims Analyst Rose Radich are here to walk us through the ordinance. Welcome.
Good morning, Council. For the record, I'm Deputy City Attorney Beth Woodard. This settlement resolved claims brought by Logan Colwell for injuries he sustained on August 15th, 2020. In the early morning hours of August 15th, Mr. Colwell participated in a demonstration near the North Lombard overcrossing of I-5. Portland Police Bureau declared an unlawful assembly and began dispersal of the remaining individuals. During the dispersal, an officer pushed Mr. Colwell. Mr. Colwell fell and sustained injuries to his knee, which required surgical repair. Mr. Colwell brought claims in federal district court against the officer for violations of his Fourth Amendment rights and claims against the officer and the city for battery and intentional infliction of emotional distress. The parties recently attended private mediation in June and agreed to resolve this matter for $95,000, inclusive of attorney fees, economic and non-economic damages. The City Attorney's Office and Risk Management recommend approval of the settlement. Of course, I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Colleagues, any questions? Keelan, is there any public testimony?
We do have one person signed up, Mark Porras.
Okay. Hello, Mark.
Morning, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Great, thanks. Good morning, Presiding Officer Rubio and Commissioners. My name is Mark Porras. I use he, him pronouns, and I'm with the group Portland Cop Watch. We have no objection to the city paying this $95,000 settlement for excessive force used on a community member in August of 2020 by Officer Nicholas Bianchini. This settlement raises the total, according to our records, paid out by the city for protests between 2018 and 2020 to at least $1,375,000. As we have pointed out before, Street Roots reported on additional settlements that apparently never came to council for votes, and also presented data showing that the city has spent more than $1.75 million on its own legal fees for cases in 2020 alone. We hope that Mr. Colwell has fully recovered from the injuries and emotional distress that Officer Bianchini caused. From court records, we understand that Officer Bianchini, dressed in full riot gear and without warning, provocation, or further command, charged and used his arms and baton to forcibly shove Mr. Colwell to the asphalt while Mr. Colwell was complying with orders given to the crowd. As a result, Mr. Colwell suffered a ruptured patella tendon in his right knee, which required surgery to repair. He required physical therapy for his injuries, which are permanent in nature and have increased his susceptibility to future injury and degenerative disease. As you know, we testify on these settlements in an attempt to get you to discuss the policies that lead to these lawsuits. In 2019, Officer Bianchini fired a less lethal munition at Lane Martin prior to Mr. Martin being shot and killed by Officer Gary Doran. According to DPSST records, Officer Bianchini instructed a rapid response team in-service formation refresher training in 2018. And if this is accurate, it makes us wonder what he was teaching other officers, if his treatment of Mr. Colwell is an example. Officer Bianchini was a member of the rapid response team that resigned en masse when Officer Corey Budworth was indicted for fourth degree assault of a member of the media, also in August of 2020. We wonder if Officer Bianchini knows that the city is paying out $95,000 today due to his actions, and we wonder if he received any discipline for his excessive use of force. In closing, the ordinance states that the total cost to the city to settle this lawsuit is $95,000, which is actually just the amount of the check you're approving today. It disregards the amount of time and money spent by city employees settling this case. And we ask you again to include this information with every settlement so the public has a better understanding of the cost of policing in Portland. Thank you.
Thank you.
Keelan, that completes testimony.
Okay, great. So can we call the roll? Can any other comments, colleagues? Can we call the roll, Keelan?
Gonzalez?
Aye.
Maps?
Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Rubio?
Aye. So the ordinance is adopted. Let's move on to item 631.
Declare a surplus property a city-owned Cessna 172N and authorize the chief of police to proceed with a public sale of the property.
Since this is a second reading, and if there is no further discussion, colleagues, do we have any discussion on this? No? Okay, we can. Would you like to add anything, officers?
No.
Okay. Would you please call the roll?
Gonzalez.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Ryan.
Well, thank you for being here, officers. I vote aye.
Rubio.
I want to thank the officers for being here as well, and for the update on sourcing sustainable aviation fuel. I really appreciate that update and know that we're working together on our emissions goal. Happy to vote aye.
Thank you.
All right, moving on to item 634.
Authorize competitive solicitation and contract for the design, permitting, construction, documentation, and construction administration services for the North Portland Aquatic Center.
Commissioner Ryan.
Thank you, President Rubio. This ordinance is for a project that is close to my heart, the North Portland Aquatic Center. A year ago, we had no funding in an unknown location. We are making progress. Today, we have $37.1 million and a location. I'm very proud that this aquatic center will be located in Northgate Park in the true north of Portland. This ordinance allows Parks and Rec to move forward through the design process for the long-awaited North Portland Aquatic Center in a collaborative, efficient, and value-conscious way. This future facility will provide a public pool where kids can learn to swim, a much-needed partnership with the local schools in the Roosevelt Cluster, and older adults and seniors will be able to get exercise. Swim lessons can be a standard part of school curriculum, much like our neighbors in the jurisdiction, the David Douglas School District, and allowing our children the opportunity to learn to swim and to directly impact the disparity between Black children and youth who do not have the same access to swimming proficiency as their white counterparts. This is an equity issue. It's also a safety issue and a healthcare issue. This is a place where the community can come together. The Aquatic Center will be a community anchor, providing construction jobs first, and then recreation and programming jobs for adults and youth. I want to thank the community for their continued engagement in this project, and we're now going to build something we can all be proud of. On that note, the leader of this whole process is Robin Johnson Craig from Parks and Rec, and she is here to give a presentation about the competitive design and construction process. Take it away, Robin.
Good morning, and thank you, Council Clerk. Oh, thank you, that's perfect. My name is Robin Johnson Craig, and good morning. Thank you, commissioners and president of the council for the opportunity to present today. I am the PPNR capital project manager for the new North Portland Aquatic Center, the Portland Parks and Recreation. And I believe Rick Noseman, the PTE services supervisor from procurement, is joining us online for questions. Next slide, please. Portland Parks and Recreation is very excited to present the next phase of the North Portland Aquatic Center. This is an incredible opportunity to provide aquatic programming to North Portland that has been long overdue. We're asking City Council to authorize a competitive solicitation and execution of a professional, technical, and expert services contract to provide the design, permitting, construction documentation, and construction administration services for the new North Portland Aquatic Center. Next slide, please. Parks 2020 vision in 2001 set a level of service goal for full service community centers. That is to develop a full service community center that is a center with a pool, arts facilities, classrooms, and active recreation facilities within 3 miles of every resident. Full service community centers provide health and recreation benefits to Portland residents of all ages, to make Portland a family friendly and livable city. PPNR currently has 4 full service community centers, including East Portland Community Center, Matt Dishman Community Center, Mount Scott Community Center, and Southwest Community Center. Charles Jordan Community Center is not considered to be a full service community center as it lacks indoor aquatics programming, and currently 70.6% of the city is served by this 3 mile full service community center service metric. As you can see in the map illustration, the 4 full service community centers have a 3 mile service area shaded in blue, and the areas not shaded in blue are those that are not currently served by the PPNR level of service metric for community centers. Next slide, please. In April 2021, Commissioner Rubio allocated $11.7 million in SDCs to address the level of service gap for full-service community center service in North Portland to cover the initial project design, permitting, and public engagement efforts for this new facility. Parks Commissioner Rubio authorized a second investment in July 2022 of an additional $5 million in Parks SDCs, and we have also received $15 million in State of Oregon lottery funds through the leadership of Representative Travis Nelson. We have $31.7 in funding to fund this new aquatic center. Next slide, please. North Portland's diverse and growing population does not currently have a pool they can use. That is approximately 70,000 people, including roughly 18,000 people of color and roughly 11,000 experiencing poverty, without a place to learn to swim, to do water programming or exercises. With this proposal for this design contract, PPNR hopes to access opportunities for young children and communities from diverse backgrounds to learn basic water survival skills and explore additional opportunities offered through an established aquatics facility. Access, like Commissioner Ryan mentioned, to these life skills is a racial equity issue. Black children in the United States drown at a rate 3 times higher than white children, and many factors contribute to this unacceptable public health outcome. Next slide, please. We are currently in phase two, site selection, programming, and schematic design. We are anticipating moving forward into phase three in early 2024, and we need approval for this upcoming PTE contract in order to efficiently move into our next phase of work for the project. Next slide, please. Our phase one engagement efforts include an extensive pre-design effort to get North Portlanders excited about this upcoming project, as shared in this long list of the community engagement efforts. Next slide, please. We've had significant community engagement for phase two, including 3 community workshops, 5 project advisory committee meetings, and in addition, we identified important affinity groups within the community to engage in 10 separate focus group meetings, which included the following meetings with low income, immigrant and refugee, Black community members, BIPOC, LGBTQIA+, and youth. Next slide. We respectfully request from City Council the approval to authorize a competitive solicitation and execution of a professional, technical, and expert services contract to provide the design, permitting, construction documentation, and construction administration services for the new North Portland Aquatic Center. Thank you. Next, questions.
Are there any questions from my colleagues? No? All right, Commissioner Ryan, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Not at this time. I'm just thank you for the great presentation and onward. This will go to the second reading then.
Yes, this is first reading. It'll move on to second reading.
Okay. We did have one person sign up to testify on this.
Sorry.
There's that.
See if they're here.
Sorry.
Kimberly Goheen Alban. Is Kimberly here? Okay.
Okay. All right. We will move this on to second reading. Thank you so much, Robin.
Thanks,
thank
Robin.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, so now we will move on to the next item, 626.
Appoint and reappoint members to the Portland Elections Commission for terms to end April 30th, 2027.
Today, Mayor Wheeler and I are submitting nominations for the Portland Elections Commission, and we ask that you vote to approve these 5 outstanding individuals to serve on the PEC for terms ending in April 2027. The PEC consists of 9 individuals who represent diverse communities and neighborhoods throughout our city. They each bring a wide variety of knowledge and expertise on campaigns, technology, democracy reform, and public engagement. And today we will be reappointing Anaí Segovia Rodriguez, Amy Sample Ward, Norman Turrell, and Amy Ruiz. Along with these reappointments, we are also appointing a new member, Kevin Neely. He brings an incredibly valuable and needed perspective to the PEC. Kevin was formerly the co-owner of CNE Systems, which specialized in campaign finance compliance and campaign finance software. I'd also like to note that Director Mote confirmed that none of these individuals participate in organizations that endorse in city council races. Now I would like to pass it to Director Mote to introduce our presenters for this item.
Sure, I believe we have Kevin Neely ready to testify.
Okay. Welcome.
Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me here today. My name is Kevin Neely, and I'm just so pleased to be seeking the appointment of this commission for this important role. You heard a little bit about my background. I've often wondered what my arcane knowledge of election law might be good for, having left CNE Systems, and this feels like the perfect opportunity. But more importantly, these issues, how we open our elections to a broader population of individuals, has long been something that I've been keenly interested in. And so I'm just really, as I said, honored to be considered for this role, and happy to step up and do my part to support fair, open, accessible elections in our city. Thank you so much for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Kevin, for being here. Any questions, colleagues?
No.
Okay. Director Mote, is there anyone else that you'd like to call up before?
Yes, Jeff Green and Kate Titus.
They're online. They're joining. Jeff and Kate, you're muted.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
All right. Should I jump right in?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, great. I was hoping you guys would give Kevin some hard questions here, so I'll just kind of tease him a little bit since he didn't get a chance to. So hello, my name is Jeff Green. I'm the current president of CNE Systems. Thanks for letting me testify on this stuff. I think it's a real important issue for us and for the city. CNE Systems provides campaign bookkeeping compliance to progressive Oregon campaigns and candidates. I have the privilege and responsibility of being treasurer to several hundred campaigns each election cycle. I don't do it alone. I have an amazing team of compliance officers and support staff that help us do this. Since the inception of the Portland's small dollar elections, my team and I have worked with 15 clients who successfully participated in the program. The program has been effective right from the start, in my opinion. There was an appropriate amount of learning curve for the participants and the stewards of the program in the beginning. I think the SDE has gotten better each term, both in its evolution of its technology and its evolving rules and guidelines based on the what we've learned as we've worked through the program. I'm really excited about this because I make a point of telling anyone who will listen that the SDE staff, both Susan and Daniel, are the epitome of good government. We're always hearing about the flaws in government, but never going to talk enough about public servants that are doing a really amazing job and really doing, not only doing their jobs well, but serving the public really well. And Susan and Daniel have done that at every turn. They've operated with the guiding principles of helping campaigns be successful within the program while protecting the integrity of the program and the public funds. I'm here today to express my personal and professional support for the appointment of members of the Portland Elections Commission. I think having a commission that takes input from campaigns and the public is incredibly valuable. I believe the PEC has an important role in making policy and program adjustments in response to the needs of the campaigns and community groups. And I'm really excited to recommend and support Kevin Neely to serve on the commission. Kevin, as he stated, he's a mentor of mine and he's my predecessor at CNE Systems. And I'd say even after 10 years, he still knows as much or more than me about campaign compliance. I still call him up when I get in a pickle and I need some advice. And beyond that, he has the technical skills, having built the software that we use at CNE Systems and his current company, Bill Tracker. So he's bringing both the understanding of the compliance rules plus the technical challenges that come with running a program like this and being successful. So I can't think of anyone in a better position to provide expertise, knowledge, and leadership as it relates to campaign finance on the future of the small dollar elections. I'm happy to answer any questions from the council. And for anyone considering running for city council or participating in the small dollar election program, give us a call because at CNE Systems, we're here to help.
Thank you. Kate.
Hi,
My name's Kate Titus. I'm here on behalf of Common Cause Oregon. And some of you know or may remember that Common Cause Oregon was the convener of A Voice for All Portland, which was the coalition that worked together to help bring this small donor program to Portland and then to help ensure its successful implementation from the community side, providing outside support. A Voice for All Portland included nearly two dozen organizations representing communities of color, students, seniors, small business and labor unions, good government advocates, environmental organizations, and others. So I'm here today to encourage your vote on these nominations to appoint the new member and also to reappoint the four members to the Public Elections Commission. I'll be brief. I just want to urge you to make these nominations today because we really want to get the commission back up and running so it can fill its really important role, the role of overseeing this important program, taking input from campaigns and the public, making any necessary policy programmatic adjustments to respond to the needs of the campaigns and the community groups, especially before the campaign season really begins in earnest. So it's really important to get this commission back up and running. It looks like we have excellent candidates, the four that we already know contribute a lot to the commission, and the new one who, as Jeff Green just spoke to, brings a lot that will add to the commission. So we hope that you can move these nominations forward. And I just close by saying that community organizations like Common Cause, which represent thousands of Portlanders, are looking to you to approve these nominations so that the PEC can get back to its important oversight responsibilities and really to provide a critical avenue for community stakeholders to give feedback on how the program works for our many diverse Portland communities. In any case, thank you for taking the time to do this today, and thank you for taking my testimony.
Thank you. Does that conclude your presentation, Susan?
Yes, it does.
Okay, thank you for that. Keelan, do we have any testimony signed up?
We do. We have two other people signed up for testimony. First up, Edith Gillis.
Hello, I'm Edith Gillis, and I support item 2626 to reappoint or appoint the Portland Elections Commissions to best represent the diversity, hope, and priorities of Portlanders. This has to be in the context of investing in an inclusive, open, fair, principled democratic elections and accountability for candidates and for electeds. We need to improve our policies and our practice of those. We can't afford to continue as we have. I trust and I appreciate Amy Reyes, Amy Sample Ward, Anna High Segovia Rodriguez, Norma Terrell, and Kevin Neely. We need this for democracy, social justice, and civilians' trust and cooperation in order to have the affordable, accessible housing for all, local rooftop solar and protection from methane and oil bomb explosions, water and local food security, disaster resilience and regenerative economy, police accountability, electeds accountability, increased mental health services, such as through the Portland Street Response, and stronger community. Fair elections with good electeds, ordinances, budgeting, policies, and practice together help prevent the causes and escalation of mental illness, and they promote the shared well-being that supports mental health. I support this.
We had one other person sign up, Kimberly Goheen-Alban. Is not here. That completes testimony.
Great, thank you. So any further discussion from my colleagues? No? Okay, if there is no other discussion, Keelan, can you please call the roll?
Wouldn't you like to make a motion to accept the report?
Right, okay.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, there was a motion that was moved and seconded. Can we call the roll?
Okay, Gonzalez.
Aye.
Maps.
I just want to thank these volunteers for agreeing to serve on this important committee. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Yes, thanks for bringing this forward. I want to thank the testimony from Jeff and Kate. And I also want to really thank you, Kevin, for stepping up to do the service. You're really the right person to join the Elections Commission. I'm glad that you're not in your former role. Of course, there'd be a conflict of interest. And when I was in education, it was always great to have retired superintendents to be engaged. It just gave you the experience without the attachment. And because it was brought up by one of the testimony, I just want to make a point that I really agree about the good work of the office, small donor office led by Susan and Daniel. I just hope that this council remembers that we need an adaptive staffing model when we're in campaign season, because I just can't see how two people who do seem like eight people sometimes can pull this off as we go forward. So that's always been my rant on that. And since it came up in testimony, I wanted to just plug that once again. I vote aye.
Rubio.
I want to thank Director Mote and Daniel for all their great work and thoughtful work on this, and thank each of the nominees for their willingness to serve on this commission. It's an excellent group of nominees. And Kevin, yes, very glad that you're joining as well. It's exciting to see your experience added to this commission. This work's incredibly important to the process, and I'm very happy to vote aye. Oh. Okay, it passes. Thank you. Resolution's adopted. Okay, Keelan, can we move on to the next item?
Item 627, authorize amended and restated intergovernmental agreement between Prosper Portland and the city, acting through its Office of Management and Finance, Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services for River District Urban Renewal Area Support.
Colleagues, this is the second reading for item 627 related to the redevelopment of the 14-acre former U.S. Postal Service property at the heart of the Broadway corridor. This item addresses the agreement between Prosper Portland and the city's Office of Management and Finance. And last week, we heard a presentation from staff about this item, as well as the next item, 628, which addresses the IGA between Prosper and the Housing Bureau. Together, these two IGAs deepen the partnerships needed to move the project forward. So are there any last questions or additional discussion before we call the roll on the first item? No. Okay. Keelan, can you please call the roll?
Gonzalez.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Ryan.
Yeah, I'm supportive of this. I just want to call out two things. I'll be really interested in the LID process and how that all plays out. It's a little bit more unique than a lot of our LIDs since there's no one occupying the space now. So I'm intrigued with how that will come to fruition. And I also really enjoyed the interaction with Kimberly Branham, the head of Prosper Portland, as we think creatively about what work offices will look like. I'm, like all of us, really concerned about recent foreclosures, include one not far away at the field office. And we just don't want to promote that kind of construction at a time when capital investments are leaving our city and all cities are scrambling to figure out what that design looks like. Because we all know, based on what we heard earlier about mental health, connection is very important, and it really does help productivity as well. And we're looking forward to what those new designs will look like as we build our downtown back. I vote aye.
Rubio.
As I shared last week, I really appreciate the mayor for co-sponsoring this item. Redevelopment of this property represents one of Portland's most significant prospects to create a vibrant and welcoming neighborhood with equitable economic opportunities and mixed income housing. I'm also really proud of the work Prosper Portland has done to date to ensure that these public dollars are being spent on the site preparation and that they're benefiting Portland businesses, including minority-owned businesses and women as well. I look forward to seeing this work move forward, and I'm happy to vote aye. So with that, it passes. Thank you, everyone. So let's move on to the next one, 628.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement between Prosper Portland and Portland Housing Bureau for the purpose of facilitating the development of affordable housing within the Broadway corridor.
Colleagues, as I referenced earlier, this is the second reading for item 628. Are there any last questions or additional discussion before we call the roll? Okay. Keelan, would you please call the roll?
Gonzalez.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye. So the ordinance passes. Thank you, everyone. So let's move on to, sorry, let me catch my 630.
Authorize agreement with the United States General Services Administration for a 3.96-acre property located at 2731 Southwest Multnomah Boulevard for $3 million and removal of deed restriction.
Colleagues, on behalf of Mayor Wheeler, I'll introduce this next item. The team at OMF is here today to present a proposal to invest $3 million of the city's ARPA funds towards a property some know as the Sears Armory. This is the first reading of this item. The Jerome Sears site has been in the city's portfolio under the Office of Management and Finance for over a decade with a deed restriction attached. There is now an opportunity to remove the deed restriction and open up the site for other allowable uses. OMF Facilities and Planning Portfolio Management Team are assisting with the deed removal agreement, and staff are here to answer any questions. So I'll now turn it over to the OMF staff to present more about this contract. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning, commissioners. For the record, my name is Rick Dyer. I am the OMF Planning and Portfolio Manager. And along with me today, it will be Pauline Goebel, who is our Senior Property Manager, who will be making the presentation, and I will be available for questions.
Thank you, Rick. So for the record, my name is Pauline Goebel, and I'm the Real Property Officer in the Planning and Property Portfolio Management Team. And today we are here to seek authority from Council to enter into an agreement with the General Services Administration to remove the deed restriction against the property known as the Sears site. Next slide, please. Thank you. For those who are not familiar with the site, it's located in Southwest Portland off of Multnomah Boulevard. It is a fairly large site. It has a main building, an auditorium space, a couple of outbuildings, and as you can see, has quite a large amount of parking area. Next slide, please. The city has used this property over the last 10 years, related mainly to the deed restriction, which is for emergency management services. So we are sharing that deed restriction in its entirety on this slide, but I also highlighted the first sentence, which really gets to the crux of the issue, and I'll go ahead and read that. That only for so long as the property is used primarily for the purpose of providing emergency management services, and if any portion of the premises shall be used for any purpose other than providing emergency management services, the title and interest in and to the portion of the premises so used shall revert to and become the property of the United States. Next slide, please. So by taking the opportunity we have now to eliminate the current deed restriction, which has limited the uses to those meeting GSA and FEMA definitions of emergency management, it will allow the current and ancillary uses at the site to continue. Next slide, please. Related to the financial resources required for this transaction, there is a one-time financial impact in the amount of $3 million within existing American Rescue Plan Act program allocations. The Grants Management Division has reviewed and determined that this is an eligible use of ARP funds. Ongoing maintenance costs are as outlined in the original ordinance, and they remain as stated and are currently funded, but this could change based upon the ultimate use at the site. So that concludes our presentation for today. Rick and I are here to answer any questions Council may have, and we appreciate this opportunity to present to you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Pauline and Rick. Colleagues, any questions or discussion?
I think there might be testimony maybe after. Yes, sir.
We have one person signed up, but I don't think they're here. I'll just double check. Kimberly Goheen Albon. Okay, that was it for testimony.
Any
discussion? Well, I have a thought. This has been quite a journey, and I assume that we're all in agreement. I'd like to see if we could expedite this with an amendment to make it an emergency item.
Sure. I don't have that in my notes. Right.
Did I just do that?
Commissioner Ryan, can I ask a question?
Yes.
Because I think the lawyer is going to ask it. Can you articulate why this is an emergency?
Well, I think, well, here's one reason why, because I won't be here next week and I'd literally like to vote on it.
Okay.
That's one. And can I think we've all experienced that. And I also know how long we've been working on this item.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Is that okay? Okay.
So how do we?
Commissioner Ryan has made a motion to add.
Yeah, I just put a motion on the table.
Okay, second.
To add the emergency clause?
Yeah.
Okay.
So then we can vote.
So I've seconded the motion.
Great.
Okay, so then we'll vote
now
on
we'll
the
vote on
motion
that first. Yeah.
To add the emergency okay. clause. Gonzalez?
Aye.
Maps?
Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Rubio?
Aye. Okay, so that passes. So now should we vote on the, we don't have testimony.
Right, nope, no testimony.
Okay, so can you please call the roll on the whole thing?
Thank you. Okay, sure thing. Gonzalez?
Aye.
Maps?
Aye.
Ryan?
Yeah, I want to thank Rick Dreyer and Pauline Goebel for your property management skills and bringing this to the council today. As I understand it, this ordinance is necessary for the city to keep in compliance with the GSA in order to continue current operations of the site. I've been told it's a very long process to be in compliance with general services, and I'm thankful that we have the money already on hand to release the limitations of the deed. I vote aye.
Rubio.
Aye. I'm really supportive of this, and thank you for the presentation. So with that, the ordinance passes. Congratulations. Thank you.
Thank you,
everyone. All right, moving on to item 632.
Authorize application and accept award funds for a hazard mitigation grant program grant for the spring water wetlands and floodplain restoration project along Johnson Creek in Muntz and Powellhurst Gilbert neighborhoods not to exceed $7,100,000.
Okay, folks, this is a second reading. So if there is no further discussion, we'll call the roll. But first, is there discussion? Anymore? Okay, let's call the roll.
Gonzalez?
Aye.
Maps?
Aye.
Ryan?
Yeah, I'm supportive of this. I just want to reiterate a couple of remarks from last week that we've all experienced this when we spend a lot of money to do restoration only for you can do 10 years of that, and it just takes a couple months of an unsanctioned camp mm-hmm. with poisonous drugs to sadly cause many times more damage than was before we started this big investment. So I look forward to the coordination of how we will protect these areas, and the environmental issues are keen for everyone on this council. So we just have to have eyes wide open when we invest in this money with the competing challenges that go with it. I vote aye.
Rubio?
I vote aye, and the ordinance is adopted. So Keelan, next item, please.
Item 633, approve findings to authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding requirements with Penn Power Group LLC to rehabilitate the cogeneration system at the Columbia Boulevard wastewater treatment plant not to exceed $1,942,008.
This is a second reading again, so I will ask if there's anything further to add by any of my colleagues before moving on. Okay, Keelan, please call the roll.
Gonzalez?
Aye.
Maps?
Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Rubio?
Aye. Ordinance is adopted. Okay, so I think we are at the end of our agenda. Yes. All right. So this concludes our council agenda for today, and we are adjourned. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Great job.